The so-called delicacies you're about to hear described are pretty revolting, but food scientist Dr. Massimo Marcone says the foods he studies are not fear factor foods like fried cockroaches or raw earthworm cocktails. He studies uncommon variations of perfectly respectable and mainstream foods, like salad dressing oil from nuts excreted by goats. Marcone has traveled the world researching bizarre delicacies. He teaches food science at the University of Guelph in Canada. His new book is called In Bad Taste, The Adventures and Science Behind Food Delicacies. Marcone spoke to Fresh Air's frequent guest host, Dave Davies.
Well, Massimo Marcone, welcome to Fresh Air. You begin your book by describing a very rare and expensive coffee, Kopi Luwak. What's distinctive about this product?
Kopi Luwak is one of those very interesting foods that have basically come from the back end of an animal. What happens is that there's a palm civet, which is an animal much like a raccoon, that eats the coffee cherries and then excretes them. And for the last 200 years, people have been collecting them, washing them, roasting them, and this is Kopi Luwak coffee.
Now, you said coffee cherries, and how is that? Is that different from coffee beans?
Yes, so what happens is you have two coffee beans within a cherry, so there's an outer parchment and flesh around the coffee seeds, and that is our coffee cherry, and it's very sweet, and that's what the animal is attracted to.
Okay. Just describe it for us. When you're looking at a pile of this animal excrement, do you actually see the coffee beans?
Yes, really you don't see very much of the brown organic matter. Really what we see is a bunch of coffee beans which are stuck together by this mucilage which comes from the coffee cherry. So really we don't see, it doesn't look like regular feces as one would think of, you know, in the kitty litter box. It's just coffee beans stuck together. It looks, has a very much like a spider type of shape to it.
How does the passage of the coffee beans through the digestive tract of this little animal, the civet, affect the bean and affect the flavor?
Well, the bean is affected on the surface where we get a certain level of pitting, which ends up being a ballistics fingerprint of the bean going through the GI tract. But also the gastric juices are getting into the bean. They break down the proteins, and then through the roasting process, these proteins react to form different flavor components in the coffee itself.
So did you actually brew coffee from the beans collected from this animal's excrement?
I sure did. I was able to brew some of the coffee right in the rainforest. What we had is we had a generator with us, and I had brought equipment to be able to roast up the coffee, so we were able to roast it up. Depending upon how long it took the people to find the coffee, so if they were able to find it right after it had come out of the animal, it was of a much superior quality than those coffee scats that had remained in the rainforest for a few days. So we were able to grade them depending upon when they were collected. So that was a new piece of information we had.
Now, this coffee, I'm sure, grows on trees, and one could harvest the beans as others are done. Now, did you get some beans that had not been eaten and excreted by this little animal and compare the taste of that coffee?
Yes, that was very important. That's what we call a control, so the coffee that has not gone through the animal. And we were able to guarantee that we had the proper control in that it is known that the civet stays within a very small geographic location. And therefore, when we find the scat, we would know that that would be the geographic location of where it had consumed that coffee. So the control was easy to find. So I collected that, and we were able to make a comparison. Now, organoleptically or taste-wise, we could tell that the Kopi Luwak had a more chocolate overtone. So the top note was that of chocolate, and then it had two sub notes of an earthy type and musty type flavor. So it's a very distinct compared to the control itself.
And how expensive is this Kopi Luwak coffee?
Well, the Kopi Luwak coffee is, in fact, about $600 a pound if one can find it. But again, it's not something that is very easy to find. Usually people can only buy it in a quarter pound lots, and you usually have to put your name in a queue, and there's usually about 300 people waiting to get a quarter pound. So you don't always get it the season that you put your name in for it.
And I guess there's an industry of people in these remote areas of Indonesia that gather this this excrement from the civet and collect the beans.
There is, and that's what sometimes leads to problems in that what I've seen in my study is that 42% of the Kopi Luwaks that are being presented on the market as Kopi Luwak coffee are in fact adulterated, so they've had other coffees mixed in with them or are complete fakes. There's not a tight control which occurs with Kopi Luwak coffee.
You write about a very strong and unusual cheese from Italy whose distinguishing characteristic is the presence of maggots. Did you believe this story when you heard it?
Well, in fact, I was told about this story by my mother, who remembers my grandfather consuming this cheese shortly after the Second World War. And so my mother says that she had consumed the cheese herself and quite liked it. And so therefore, I went to Italy to determine if I could find out anything scientifically about this particular cheese and to find out where its origin was. Was it the origins from Sardinia, as people indicated, or was it more towards the center of Italy where my grandfather was from? And it really is a cheese that is like no other. It's a cheese with millions of little maggots in it, and it's eaten, cheese and all. So you're eating the maggots and the cheese, so it's a full package deal.
Tell us about your first encounter with this cheese, this Casu Frasicu.
Well, this cheese is illegal to purchase, and therefore it's sold on the underground. And what happens is that unless you know people very well, they're not going to sell it to you because they know that, you know, they can get themselves into legal hot water if they do. So I had a journalist and a linguist go out and get the cheese for me. And I remember that when I walked into the apartment, the first thing that I was met by was this strange odor, strong odor of cheese, which was, you know, emanating from the kitchen. And as we got closer and closer, it's a cheese that first you can smell it and then you can hear it. And the reason I say you can hear it is that those little maggots, those millions of little maggots that I said are in the cheese, are literally jumping. And as they're jumping, they're hitting the container that the cheese is in. And you can hear this click, 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 click sound from the maggots themselves. So it's a very interesting. We usually don't think of hearing our food, but in this case, you can smell it, hear it, and see it.
All right, so bring us to the moment of truth. You had some of this cheese, maggots and all. What did it taste like?
Well, first of all, I didn't want to taste it because I thought, oh, no, I can't do this. This is too bizarre. So I finally got – what they did, though, was they put it into the refrigerator for me to quiet down the maggots so they wouldn't jump me as I was trying to consume them, because they get all over you. They're on your clothes, in your hair as you're trying to eat it. And it was had a very distinct flavor to it. It had a very strong, almost a niche-y type of taste and sensation in your mouth. And it was soft, like much like a camembert cheese. And to be totally honest, it was very pleasant to eat. It was something that, you know, without the maggots, it would have been a perfectly good cheese that you would just say it's great to eat.
And I have to ask, could you actually taste the maggots themselves individually? Because they are in your mouth, too.
They're all in your mouth, too. But really, you can't. You don't even have the texture of the maggots because they're really incorporated into the cheese themselves. And I should say that they're very small. They're almost microscopic in nature. They're not the big maggots that we think of that are associated with rotting things. Really, the maggot that we get is from a certain type of fly. It's not the house fly that is producing the maggots, but a certain type of fly which associates itself with the dairy-type environment. And the maggots are very small, almost microscopic. You can't see them.
What do the maggots do to the cheese?
Well, what happens is that the maggots themselves, they burrow through the cheese, and therefore they change the texture of the cheese to a more softer type of cheese. And at the same time, they excrete certain types of secretions, which really cause a change in flavor in the cheese. You get a breakdown of the fats, and therefore you get that different flavor development due to the maggots being present themselves. And we were able to test cheeses that had not been infected with the maggots, and there was a very distinct flavor difference. There wasn't that same type of strong, itchy flavors I would describe it as, and hot flavor that I would describe of the ones with the maggots, nor was it that soft. So the maggots were integral to the production of this type of cheese.
Is this widely eaten in certain areas of Italy, and it's simply known that you don't sell it openly, but is consumed?
It's consumed in almost every region of Italy. Whether people will tell you that they consume it or not, people know that people kind of frown upon it, so sometimes they'll even keep it silent with regards to that. This casu frazuku is actually served as a centerpiece at certain weddings also. It's considered something of very high value, and so people want to have it as part of their festivities. So it's very common throughout Italy.
And the noise adds to the occasion, too, also, I suppose.
Oh, of course, it's there.
Why is this cheese illegal in Italy?
That was a question that was brought forward. And really what I believe, and I stand to be corrected or not, but I submit that really, because Italy has a big cheese market and exports all over the world, they really fear that if people know that they're into this type of cheese, that they're consuming this, that it will reflect badly upon the cheese industry as a whole. And therefore, they've put a ban in by saying, yes, we know that people consume it, but it's illegal to purchase it. And therefore, you know, we know what good cheese is and what bad cheese is.
In your book, you describe tracking down these seemingly bizarre foods that did come, as you said, from the rear ends of animals or accompanied by maggots, and discovered that, in fact, they really exist. Is there another legendary food that you're ready to pursue? What's next for you?
Well, there's something that I'm going to be doing in the fall. Is I'm going to be going to China, and I thought, well, Kopi Luwak was, you know, an anomaly. And then I find out that for the tea drinkers out there, there is a tea which is produced by, and it's consumed by an insect and excreted by an insect, and they produce one of the best teas in the world. And so therefore, I'll be going off to China in the fall and be on that pursuit. But I'm always pursuing other foods. And one could say to me, well, why does a scientist do that? Why does a scientist in a very prestigious university, we're considered the best food science department in all of Canada, why do I go and do this type of research? And really, the reason why I do is partly to make up for the prejudice that I had against foods. I really thought that I knew it all about these foods, and I knew what foods one could eat and what was good for you and what was bad for you. And some of these fear factor foods that I'm looking at, I had all my ideas why people should not be consuming them because they could cause harm and so on and so forth. And what I found out was that in many cases, these foods are as harmless as other foods that we are presently consuming. And therefore, I continue to go out. I continue to do the science behind these foods and bring them to people's attention. And so that, you know, we can have a broader experience together of what these foods are and what the science is behind them.
Well, Massimo Morcone, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Absolutely my pleasure.
Massimo Morcone is the author of In Bad Taste. He spoke with Fresh Air's frequent guest host, Dave Davies.